Now, Toucher.
He turned out to be a real jerk.
Rich.
He's a disruptive influence.
It's the Toucher and Rich Show.
Well, who's going to relate to that?
Get in touch with Toucher and Rich. Call 617-779-0985. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
My name is Ace, ooh, and I've been on this case. Ace is on the cape.
Now, 98.5 of Sports Hub, it is Toucher and Rich, 6:03, Monday morning, and sitting to my left is a gentleman who I saw on the TV last night. Mr. Hardy.
You saw me on the TV, did you there?
I always like you so much. He's the only one who gets that reference. I came as far
You're as such a super lady.
Can I sit over here on your side?
No, I'd prefer that if you sat over there.
I think that I told my wife the other day, I don't think a day goes by that I don't quote. He's looking at us like I have two heads. What movie is that from? You have no clue.
No, I don't know whatsoever. I don't know.
It's Fargo. I quote Fargo at least once a day.
That's right.
There might be like 15 different lines that you can use in any different scenario for the movie Fargo.
Dan just said in my ear, Dan O'Brien says this to me probably once a week.
What's that?
Usually it's I just walk by my work. You want me to do a lot count? I'll do a goddamn lot count. all I'll say to Hardy, we just pass each other by, and then that's about it.
Yeah. That is, I got to think, out of all the movies that have ever been made, that's the one that somehow has stuck with the most quotes that come out of my mouth during any given week. Like whenever I'm hungry, I'm always like, I want to go to Pancake's house. I'm blank and hungry now, you know. I always say.
Shot in a steak.
Oh, it's the best. One of the all-time greatest movies.
And the thing is, some of the lines become so like often recited that you don't even think about where you're from. And some of them are real simple. You'll just say, oh, yeah.
Oh, sure. Happy now, blank hole. You know, I say it all the time, too.
Yeah, you end up saying like a lot of them all the time. Now, if there's one that I say, it's probably Top Gun, and I say it a lot in a lot of different circumstances. Generally, it's like sports related, and I'll even do it when I'm like, you know, playing with my kids or something, and I'll leave off the God part of it, but I'll say, damn it, Maverick, and I'll say that a lot.
Oh, really?
Damn it, Maverick.
There's always a time to say, damn it, Maverick.
Right. Or, you know, gee, damn it, Maverick. You know, and it's when you miss a putt. It's when you, you know, drop a knife when you're loading the dishwasher. And so in terms of if we're going to count that, I probably quote Top Gun, but only for that one line.
Okay.
Because I say, gee, damn it, Maverick, 10 times a week.
When is the last time you saw Top Gun? Like you sat down and actually watched
last
start
year.
To finish?
Yeah. Last year, start to finish.
You saw it last year,
start to finish.
What was the scenario that led you to sitting and watching the entire thing?
I was awesomely lame on a Saturday night, and it was on.
And you just by yourself watched it?
Yes,
I couldn't.
Wife was in another room. Okay. Yes, watched it.
Top Gun is such a bad movie. Like in so many ways, it's not even it's bad. I mean, it's watchable because it's cheesy and you're laughing at it. But there's parts in it that you're just sitting yourself going, why did anyone think this was good? Like, do you remember the part when there was the big insult where he starts hitting on Kelly McGillis and that guy Slider's like, crash and burn, Maverick.
And then he leans over and sniffs him.
The big insult.
Yeah.
Slider, you stink.
Yeah.
And he walks away and Slider's like, I don't stink. He starts like smugging. Like, who gets offended by that?
I don't know.
That's like the most G-rated insult of all time.
Yeah. There's another pilot sitting next to him. You know, it's the it's the token minority in an 80s movie.
Okay.
The black pilot.
Sure.
We could have had him, man.
What's that guy? Yeah. What's his name? It's not Merlin.
Is it Hollywood? That's not Hollywood.
And it's probably something like, you know, thinly veiled, still getting over our racist tendencies in this country. His call sign was probably like Jefferson. You know? Or like Franklin. You know?
Franklin. Named after everyone's favorite peanut.
But now I have to look this up. Now this is going to bother me.
Who was the black man in Top Gun? Is that what you're going to
do? No. The call sign. The call sign.
The call sign for the black guy in Top Gun.
Yeah, I got to look that up now.
But I think he's sitting next to Slider, and he's the one laughing like, oh, he got you. He got you,
stink. That was the all-time burn. Yeah, that's a movie that somehow it came up in conversation the other day. And my wife showed my son the trailer, and he was like all in. And I'm like, I don't think I've raised you right. Like,
Sundown, in case you were wondering.
Sundown. You're joking.
No, I'm looking at IMDb. Sundown. I'm not kidding.
That's really his
Clarence
name?
Gilliard Jr. Sundown.
You couldn't have nailed it anymore if you tried, Hardy.
Oh my God.
Look at that. That's unbelievable.
That is that's
Sundown.
That is strange.
Yeah, huh? Walker. He was what's his name? Second in Walker, Texas Ranger. Same guy.
Well, you know
he was the deputy for Chuck Norris. Right. Walker.
You know they're making a new one, a new Top Gun.
Yes,
it's like called like Top Gun. Why did we make this? But it's got the son of Goose in it. And that's played by Miles Teller.
Oh,
so
great.
He'll always be wearing a shirt. He will, even when they're playing beach volleyball, they will never take their shirts off.
And it's not a reboot. It's
a sequel.
A long time later sequel.
Yeah. And then Val Kilmer is coming back. I'm not going to make any jokes on his looks like I did in the past because I realize he's been sick. He's been dealing with some pretty serious issues. So I actually don't even know what's going on now, what his prognosis is, but he is going to be in it. And I know that... Tom Cruise, obviously. Okay, here's a mind-blowing fact, which is true, because I had to look it up, but I saw someone post this weekend. Did you know, you've seen the new trailer for Mission Impossible 5, right?
Yes.
Okay, Tom Cruise running around once again, doing ridiculous stunts, jumping off trains and all this.
Which, can we just say, and I've said this before, I think I said it maybe the last time I was on with you and Fred, or maybe just Fred, that I will see that movie and it will be phenomenal.
Yep.
Like for the lunatic that Tom Cruise is, the guy didn't make very many bad movies.
No.
The Mummy. The Mummy's stunk.
You like Vanilla Sky?
No.
I didn't think Vanilla Sky was good at all.
See, I had seen
There's
the
parts of it
one.
that I like, yeah, Vanilla but, Sky, but in terms of an overall movie, no. But you name 10 Tom Cruise movies just randomly, and I bet 8 of them are like sit down, watch them, enjoy them, good movies.
Night and Day. KNIGHT.
Not good.
Not great.
Not great.
But for every Night and Day, you can name a Edge of Tomorrow. You know, Live, Die, Repeat.
Ooh, Edge of Tomorrow was great. Like, that was like, what was one of those movies that nobody saw when it came out? And once it hit like DVD, they changed the name of the movie because Edge of Tomorrow, he doesn't mean anything, but it's basically a Groundhog Day, except he's battling aliens and he keeps getting killed. And that movie was, that was really, really good.
But Minority Report and like all the cheesy ones too, like Days of Thunder and Top Gun. It's like,
I love Days of Thunder.
Yes.
I love it.
It's stupid, but yes.
You want to talk about movies that have a scene that for all the wrong reasons, somehow, like it should on paper be the dumbest thing ever, but gets me every time. Is when Robert Duvall comes in and starts talking to the car. I want to make you fat.
Yeah.
I want to add extra.
This is not the answer I'm looking for.
And I'm 400 feet of fuel line, so you can hold an extra oil tanker of gas.
Like, right. On paper, if you had told me the guy's going to go and talk to a car about how fast he's going to make it, this is the dumbest thing ever. But just when Robert Duvall does it, I am in 100%. But here's the fact that blew my mind this weekend. So you've seen Tom Cruise running around everything. Did you know that Tom Cruise right now is older than Wilford Brimley was when he filmed Cocoon?
That's very scary.
I'm going home. I can't even process that.
Tom Cruise is 56.
Jesus.
And Wilford Brimley's just one of those guys that was born looking old. From what I saw, apparently he was 49 when he made Cocoon.
And he was playing a retiree, somebody who was clinging to death.
Yeah, he was the Quaker Oats guy.
Life.
Yeah, so apparently he was 49, Wilford Brimley, in the movie Cocoon, and Tom Cruise is 56. And I had to look it up and make sure that was true because I saw someone post that. Good so Lord. You could even say that Tom Cruise is
he was born in 1934.
Wilford Brimley?
And Cocoon came out in 85.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, he was like, old. He looked old as hell when he was young.
God.
I mean, Tom Cruise, A, doesn't age, and B, we know that Wilford Brimley was, like, born an old man.
Tom Cruise is 56 years old.
Yeah, he doesn't look at it. He doesn't look at it at all. He's got that weird Scientology voodoo magic that's working.
Or, to put another way, Wilford Brimley, when he shot Cocoon, because those movies shoot a year or two before they came out,
uh-huh.
was as old as Wallach is now.
All right. F all of you.
That's true.
That's wrong. That's wrong what you just did right
there.
That's
true. How old
are
you, Wallach?
Wrong. 50.
Okay, there it is.
That's wrong.
That's it. That's it.
Even when it came out, he was younger than you.
You know, I thought we had this thing. F you. You're done. You're dead to me this morning.
No.
Dead to me.
It's.
I don't care what you say. You're dead. It's over.
It speaks ill of Wilford Brimley, not of you.
Actually, John Wallach just got a new endorsement. I don't know if you knew about this.
Beat it. Diabetes. You know, I have diabetes.
You're going to take over for Wilford Brimley now.
Diabetes.
John Walk.
Diabetes. Call Liberty.
Okay.
Call Liberty.
The diabetes remake.
Call Liberty. Diabetes. These are my testing supplies.
All kidding aside, you know what I got in the mail last month? I got an A. I did. I got an AARP card in the mail last month.
Start using sure. that thing, man. 10%.
Seriously.
I went down a rabbit hole this weekend with the whole Wilford Brimley thing, and some genius on the internet made a remix of that commercial, except it was to Rock Me Amadeus, and it was diabetes.
That's good.
Absolutely genius.
Up until this moment, I thought it was Wilfred Brimley.
It's Wilford.
Will Ford.
Yeah,
Will
oh,
Ford
I had no
Brimley.
Idea.
Yeah,
is that
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Okay, so here's something else, as long as we're completely off the rails. As I look at Clarence Gilliard Jr.
Sundown. Call sign Sundown.
Call sign Sundown from
yep.
Top Gun.
Yep. Oddly enough, not in the sequel.
The nerdy dude in Die Hard, the first one.
Oh, the one, and the quarterback is toast. That's him?
Yeah.
That's him.
Oh, yeah.
About that. Whenever they needed that guy.
Everything was quiet except for the four guys driving an RV.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
Right. It looks like the police have themselves an RV.
That's it. That's right. That's the line.
All right. Well, it is a great day to have Hardy in studio because for the first time in a long time, people who don't watch golf were watching golf because of Tiger Woods. We will get to Hardy's opinion on all that. On top of everything that's been going on with your Red Sox and training camp opening up with the Patriots, we will get to that right after the CBS Sports Minute with Boomer Esiason, brought to you by Acura of Peabody.
Stay tuned for Toucher and Rich on 98.5 Sports Hub.
Recapping what you missed, it's Toucher and Rich.
Five of Sports Hub. It is Toucher and Rich with Hardy in this morning. So Jeffrey McNoone Cares won the Open yesterday, but this guy for a hot minute unbelievably had a shot.
So Tiger through it all this week just seems to be moving closer and closer to not only winning a tournament, but winning a major championship.
All right, when people who never watch golf are texting you about the Open, you know Tiger Woods is back. For a brief period on Sunday, Tiger had the lone lead in Scotland, and you could hear TVs all across America flipping on to watch. It would have been one of the more ridiculous moments in golf history. Instead, they got to see Tiger shank it into a crowd of spectators on the 11th. He went double bogey into bogey, and that was it. Tiger finished with a final round 71, tied for sixth. But holy hell, for a moment there, it looked like it was going to happen. And you could almost see... Was Rory McIlroy at the time, was he too ahead of Tiger when he started to just suck and he started like bogeying holes? It kind of almost seemed like old Tiger, where the guys ahead of him on Sunday would just see him coming and they would start to lose it. And for a moment, I thought we were going to have that kind of magic moment back. And Hardy, I saw you tweeting and you were obviously losing your mind as well.
I was losing my mind. I mean, it was compelling. And this is, you know, one of the rare instances where golf captures the imagination of the larger sporting world. And it, you know, it doesn't even usually happen at the Masters because there's enough going on in early April where people are thinking about baseball and they're thinking about still hockey and basketball. But this was amazingly compelling yesterday. And to your point, Rich, I don't know if it's as much as the guys were reacting to Tiger. And that was part of it. You know, golfers have said ever since Tiger started this, you know, most recent quote unquote comeback, that it's different when he's on the course. That no matter where you are, you can tell where Tiger is mm-hmm. when he makes a birdie because the sound is different. The roar is different. Yep. The crowd, the energy is different. All those cliches hold true. So that is part of it. But I also think a lot of this has to do with the pressure of playing down the stretch on the Sunday of a major tournament where Tiger, for all his confidence and all his bravado, when he comes to the course and, you know, after 54 holes and he's saying, well, I'm within five strokes or four strokes the lead and it's anybody's turn. He doesn't really believe that.
Right.
These, you know, anybody who's not in the first or second group or one or two shots, they're not thinking about necessarily winning this thing. Jordan Spieth and Kevin Kisner, they're the guys, and Xander Schauffele, really, they're thinking about winning this thing because they're tied or they're a stroke off the lead heading into the final 18, and they play with that pressure all day. And that pressure gets to them, some players, mm-hmm. much earlier in the round. For Tiger, the pressure doesn't get to him until he's through his first nine, and all of a sudden he has the lead.
Steps on 11, and all of a sudden, hi.
Now you're playing to win the British Open.
Yeah.
I know I said I was playing to win the British Open after three rounds. No, you're not.
No,
you're
four strokes.
Now you're playing to win the British Open. Yep. So I think it's some of those guys just reacting to the pressure, but some of them reacting to Tiger being out there too. When Jordan Spieth makes a double like he did on the sixth hole,
you got to wonder.
Part of that is just playing under the pressure of, but part of it is knowing that Tiger is up in front of you and he's two under on the day and you're already two over.
So I was at a restaurant while all this was happening and you could have drawn a line as to who was rooting for and against Tiger Woods right down gender lines. Every guy in the place was cheering with every great shot and every woman in the place was going nuts every time he shanked it. I think, I mean, like, we all love a redemption story, and even if you thought he was a dink, that period when he was dominant was fun as hell, and you'd like to have some of that back. You know, it's kind of like the member berries. You know, you want to relive some of those moments where on Sunday, Tiger's just going to come back, and he's going to somehow pull it off, and everyone else is going to crap their pants, and he's going to end up winning. But what he did in the eyes of women is apparently unforgivable. It's like a crime that I don't care. Like, if everything's taken away from you, what misfortune you suffer ever long, the punishment will never be severe enough. So I guess it's true. Men are the more forgiving sex.
Well,
I think we learned that yesterday.
Unforgivable, maybe. And I'm not saying I personally like the guy. I'm saying personally, it's impossible to know him. It's like saying, you know, the same thing about Michael Jordan or, you know, the best of all time in any sport, which is probably still Jack. But if Tiger Woods manages to win even a couple of regular tournaments, right?
Yeah.
And I'm talking three more. He passes Sam Snead as the all-time winningest golfer ever. Right now, it's Jack Nicklaus with 18 majors, Tiger with 14 majors. But where Tiger has the edge on Jack is just the number of wins, regular tour wins, all that stuff. If he wins a few more, Tiger gets himself back into the conversation as, wait a second, is he the greatest of all time?
Mm-hmm.
I know Jack has more majors, but then you start comparing the fields and who they were playing against. You're talking about somebody who dominated the sport to a degree where he changed the sport. They started lengthening golf courses. Golfers started paying way more attention to their fitness and their off-season routines. Every single player, to a player, you ask them now if they, in their formative years, were any time between 1990 and 2008 when they were coming up, what made you want to be a golfer? They will all say Tiger Woods.
Sure.
He changed the sport. Now, you could say that Serena Williams was dominant. They didn't change tennis because of Serena Williams. They changed golf courses all over the world because of what Tiger did. He won the U.S. Open by 15 strokes.
And
this doesn't happen anymore. He was dominant in a way that we'll never see. That's all people like me, I think, really. I don't want to go have a beer with Tiger. I just want to recapture a little bit of that and have that feeling of knowing this. You're watching something singularly unique.
Okay,
you know, and I'm not misusing the word. I mean, like, once in a lifetime type of uniqueness is what we saw with Tiger during his dominant period.
Okay, go back to like the 50s and 60s. Would you argue that every decade had like a great? like somebody that everyone looked at as being like, this guy's just dominant. He's like the dominant player in the field. Or there's one or two guys that everyone knew their name and everyone rooted for. Why has there not been anyone since Tiger Woods? Why has everyone been just kind of somewhat nameless? The biggest name you've gotten out of it has been Jordan Spieth. And who's really passionate about Jordan Spieth? Or Rory McIlroy, who's like a huge, like, oh, I can't wait to see what Rory McIlroy does. Why has golf not been able to find another superstar?
McIlroy's not likable.
Tiger
that's
Woods.
Part of it.
Well, yeah, I mean, that is part of it. But why have they not been able to find another superstar since Tiger Woods in, what, in 2008? Was that when he won his last major?
That was his last major. But people forget that he was the number one player in the world and won five times in 2013. 5 years ago, he was the best golfer in the world. He didn't win a major, which is what a lot of casual fans, that's the only thing they want to count.
Sure.
But he was still the best player in the world, and as voted on by his peers, guys who hated him, guys who would tee it up against him and go to the golf course, and like Phil Mickelson and other guys have said, you know, about Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas, these guys think they know what it's like to play against Tiger. They don't. Here's what it was like to play against Tiger in his prime. You went to the course on Thursday for your first round, and you knew you couldn't win.
Yeah, yeah.
You were one of the best 125 golfers in the world. You're in the tournament. You're here. You're making millions of dollars, and you know you cannot win because Tiger's here.
It's Tiger versus the field.
It's Tiger versus the field. Why has no one else stepped up? It's because he is a singular, unique force in that sport. It's like saying how come nobody's been as good as I can't even
but almost every sport there's been someone who's kind of taken the torch has been somewhat like a dominant superstar.
Right,
in
right.
Basketball,
LeBron,
you know,
took over for Jordan.
Right, you've got that.
No one ever thought there'd be anyone as good as Jordan.
And it kind of happened in golf. That's the point I'm trying to make. Like, even from the 50s and you go all the way through, there was always one guy that was just like the dominant guy.
I don't know. I mean, everybody keeps saying how there's this young crop of, you know, good talent. And, you know, you guys have had Shane Ryan on, the Tame of the Tiger guy who's written about it. And, you know, he says that, you know, they're going to replace Tiger Woods, you know, with a group of players. And, you know, between Jordan Spieth and Dustin Johnson. Dustin Johnson, the number one player in the world, was on a British Airways flight home on Saturday morning. He missed the cut. Justin Thomas. Did Justin Thomas look like he was ready to take over the world? Bye, Justin.
On top of
didn't
that,
make the cut.
I could put Justin Thomas in front of 100 random Bostonians. How many would recognize him?
Defending champion at the Dell Technologies Champion.
Yes. How many would recognize him?
Phenomenal player.
I would I'm with Dan. Dan says two. I'm with Dan.
Yeah.
2 out of 100 would recognize who he is.
The guy's unbelievable. It doesn't even approach what Tiger was in his prime. That's why I think a lot of people get excited when you see him out there, because this is a chance to kind of recapture something that was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Oh, is it going to come around again, even for one tournament? Think Jack Nicklaus winning the Masters in 1986. People lost their minds. Mm-hmm. It's like they knew he wasn't back, but you got to see it one more time in your life.
Well, there
that's what me and a lot of other people are waiting
for.
Well,
there was a moment at the Open yesterday that has got a lot of people hand-wringing. There is a lot of controversy having to do with a certain thing that was caught on television. We will get to that right after John Wallach's headlines.
Ticked off of myself for sure. I had a chance starting at back nine to do something and I didn't do it. I thought nine would be the number. You know, there's three guys at nine. I figured one of the three guys would shoot even par. I know it's tough out there, but I figured I need to go get that number somehow. Unfortunately, I hit a 10 brass, grab my shaft again and hit it left and made a couple mistakes around the green.
.985 Sports Hub. It is Toucher and Rich, and Hardy's in here. We're talking about Tiger Woods yesterday. Real quick, let's take Scott on line one. Dan, could you pull up Scott? Scott, you're on Toucher and Rich. What's up, McMahon?
Hey.
What's up?
Can you hear me all right?
I can hear you just fine.
Oh, cool. Hardy, I'm telling you, when Tiger's on the course, it's total intimidation. It's un-freaking real. I was on my friggin' ceiling with my 7-iron when he took the leaderboard. Oh, you're so right, brother. When he's out there and he's on his game, they all choke. Every freaking one of them. DJ went home Saturday. Correct me if I'm wrong.
DJ went home. Yeah, he missed the cut. But here, I want to believe you and I want to back you up.
Hang on. Let me finish rambling. I've like wound right up because you were talking about it today. Okay. I didn't expect to hear this today.
Okay.
Sit down, co-host.
What's that?
I'm talking to Hardy.
Yeah, yeah. Rich is putting me in my place so that you can finish your statement. Go ahead, Scott.
No, he already knows my drill. I call all the time. I'm a total pain in the rump. Anyway, I'm a stay-at-home dad. Anyway, let's get to what I was getting at. If I was to tee off with Tiger, let's say we get to the first tee box, even on, let's say, Friday, okay?
Yeah.
Close to moving day.
Yeah, yeah.
I would walk up to him. I don't care who I was. I'd say, hey, dude, do me a favor. Put on a clinic and bury me by 12 strokes today. I want to be freaking humiliated by you on national TV.
Throw dog food at me.
I love that.
So here's the only thing I will say to counter that, Scott.
Humiliate
personality
me.
Snapshot.
That's right.
Who won the British yesterday?
What's that?
Who ended up winning the tournament?
Francesco guy there. Yeah. Melanie Roy?
Yeah.
Close enough.
Who was he paired with yesterday?
Tiger.
Right. So if Tiger is such this intimidating force still, how does the guy who's paired with him end up winning?
I'll tell you how. Because he doesn't have the notoriety, and Tiger's drawn all the attention. He's sitting there in his own head going like, you know something? I'm playing with Tiger. I'm going to give it everything I've got, and we'll see how it plays out.
And
he didn't let it get into his head.
And from a TV
perspective. Hardy, let Scott finish. He has the floor.
Hang on a second. I got something about Rory McIlroy, too. You
That's quite all right. I'm going to let you go, Scott. Thank you very much for calling
in. You know, from a TV perspective, it was about Tiger and Jordan Spieth, and you mixed in some Shoffley and all that stuff. You know, Molinari, what was his signature shot to win the British Open? Francesco Molinari.
I have no idea because I didn't care.
I didn't care.
Yep.
They barely showed him until the end when it's like, holy crap, this guy's going to get to 8-under on 18. I guess we better pay attention to him. But that doesn't mean that in the moment, as you know, he's shot for shot with Tiger and they're playing together, he's not feeling it. All the eyes are on that group. So I have to say the intimidation factor is not what it was 10, 15 years ago anymore. It's not. If it is, how in the world did Molinari how was he able to put together that round in the fourth round?
Standing right next to him, yeah.
And end up winning it. It's different.
Well, one thing that's getting a lot of play today is this.
Well, there's a little yell in Tiger's swing. He's looking over to the left.
Yeah, that was right in the middle of it.
But ball seems to be okay.
That was not nice.
All right, we're going to listen in here as we show you Tiger swing again here at 18.
No!
And he goes, no, what are you doing? So there's a lot of people who are pissed at the guy that yelled at Tiger in the middle of his backswing of the tee box on the 18th yesterday. A lot of people saying that the guy should be kicked out and never let back into another tournament. I heard even some people saying yesterday that he should be arrested.
Oh, God.
Which is great.
Right. Okay.
But my question is, why? Like, why is it that you can yell your asses off at a guy in a baseball uniform trying to hit a 95-mile-per-hour fastball, but if we dare make a peep at a golf tournament, then we should be arrested? Why have we chosen golfers?
Because golf is different. Golf has more rules and more stingy people who follow them.
Okay, well, one of the great things about sports is that we as fans, our support or negative support can affect the performance of an athlete. We show up to a game. We're given thunder sticks with giant heads at basketball games to distract a guy making free throws. We use vuvuzelas. I don't, but people use vuvuzelas at soccer games. And when LeBron's in town, you know, we sometimes wear Delonte West masks to distract LeBron James. Sure.
Because
why is golf the one sport where you can't stand and they can't stand rooting openly to have a guy lose and you have to be there like you're some kid taking the ACT in high school?
Number one, because they're soft. And number two, at some point they decided golf was a sport we had to be quieted. So you end up playing golf in silence your entire life. And when you get to that moment and someone screams in the background, you're not used to it. And it's jarring. Now, Rich, you play enough to know that it's like, that would be jarring.
And we yell.
Yeah.
We actually do.
At the Ryder Cup, when they get everybody all amped up,
yeah,
you know, on the first tee of like the first match and everybody's screaming at once, those guys don't mind it. They like it because, okay, I know this is coming. They can hit through it, but it's jarring to have somebody scream in the middle of silence. I will say this. Is Stevie Williams was still on the bag for Tiger?
Oh, hell yeah.
He'd hunt that guy down and spear him with a five iron.
He would beat him to death with his yardage book, and then he would go find the guy's family, and he would burn their house down, and he would pee on the ashes, and he would. I mean, it would. It would have been an absolute bloodbath.
Who's Stevie caddying for these days?
If that Hardo, that Stevie's caddying for. Oh God, it was Adam Scott. I don't think he is anymore.
Okay.
Though. Oh, I think he's retired.
Steve. Well, I used to have these clips saying I'm only like there's two things I like to do, and that's win golf tournaments and drive race cars fast.
It's Hardo.
Like, yeah, you're total Hardo. But I mean, the thing is though, is that why is it the world has decided that you can't yell at a golf tournament? As far as I'm concerned, you should be able to yell, fart, use a slide whistle in the middle of a guy's backswing. Because you know what? F that guy. Golf has too many rules for spectators anyway. Those stupid hush signs that the old ladies hold. You know, when you're shh, and they scold you if you happen to just be in the middle of a polite conversation with somebody, making you leave your cell phone in the car. Like, it's gotten ridiculous to go to any kind of tournament.
That's the Masters, right?
Yeah, and you know what? I've got no problem with that guy because you know what? It added chaos, and it pissed off Tiger Woods. And you know what? A lot of people hate Tiger Woods. So that part of it was kind of fun. As a spectator, I don't understand why this sport is coddled. Whereas you've got JD Martinez going up to bat. And I mean, you got to think about difficulty, level of difficulty.
Well, but you get it in basketball, too. It's like nobody makes a sound when the home team is shooting a free throw.
But it doesn't matter. That's the advantage you have as a fan when another team comes into town. You can scream and you can yell
but
at them.
But there is no hometown crowd for golfers. Okay. It's like for tennis. It's like there's no hometown tennis players. So everybody gets the same level of respect.
All right, let's say that somebody comes like the Celtics are playing the 76ers. But doesn't mean a 76ers fan can't come to the TD Garden. And scream when...
And what would happen if they did?
Well, they'd probably get tisk-tisk scolded and get a knuckle sandwich right into the nose.
Easy.
Kind of tap on the shoulder.
Right. Say, kind
please
of,
stop
pardon
doing
me,
that.
Sir, shall we dance?
Yeah.
But boy, there were people... That was the best. The arrested take was something that even people in legitimate media were saying. Yes. I would have walked up and taken his badge and walked him right to security and had him spend some time and learning what it's like to respect the game of golf.
Do that with everyone who yells mashed potatoes or get in the hole. But, you know, those guys are way more annoying than somebody who just yells once. And by the way, it didn't affect him. He hit it like 2 feet into the right rough, and he still knocked it to about 6 feet on his approach on 18. So it did not affect him. He missed that last putt, and it wouldn't have mattered. I mean, that was Molinari's tournament at that point, and it did not alter the outcome.
One of the all-time great whiners in sports, too, Tiger Woods. So that's why another reason why it's tough to find sympathy. As much as I wanted him to win yesterday, it's funny. If he would have won yesterday, I would have gone back to rooting actively against him. It's like, I just want that one because that's a moment. Like, that's a cool moment when you see that happen. But then after that, you know, after that guy. I mean, I didn't like him before he won. I was excited to watch him. But as a person, I just thought he was like a baby. He would always complain. Oh, Tiger. Remember those clips?
Tiger.
Of like, Tiger.
Yeah.
I just give him a pass on so much stuff that I would find despicable in a lot of other athletes because, once again, we saw him. You know, we were alive to see a unique force.
Sure.
In you know, call it a sport, call it an activity, whatever it is. It's, you know, they're put it this way. He was not the most famous athlete in the world. He was, by some measures, and I remember reading this back then, the most famous person in the world.
Oh, I saw that a while back, like even more than the Pope, and it was, like he was more recognizable than the Pope.
Take photos of Tiger Woods and show it to, you know, Kalahari Bushmen and say, who is this? That's Tiger Woods. you could do it in China. You could do it in the South Pole. He was the most recognized human being on the planet. That's what we sat through. So, yeah, there's a lot of weirdness going on with somebody who reaches that kind of level of fame. I mean, he was Michael Jackson, but as a golfer. You know, think about that. Yeah. Golfer.
It was all
achieved that type of notoriety.
It was all because of Stevie Williams. He made Tiger what he was. True badass.
And Fluff. And you know, don't forget about his first caddy, Fluff.
Right. 617-779-0985. We will update you on what's been going on or what's going to be happening this week at camp. Also, with the Red Sox, who scored a zillion runs yesterday.
The games are only half of it. Thatcher and Rich.
.985 Sports Hub. It's Thatcher and Rich. It's going to be a kind of an interesting day because, first of all, at 10 o'clock, the
debut of the Zoe and Bertrand show simulcast. And Hardy, you're on our show.
Yeah.
What does that mean? Does that mean it's Sarge? Does that mean Sarge?
Oh, that'd be great.
Is that what, can someone look, check the schedule?
So,
Sarge on day one, actually day two and three, because you're in with us Tuesday and Wednesday too, right?
Correct.
So Hardy, welcome to the team of people who are not on the first day of their simulcast.
Right here.
You were gone too?
I was gone. I was not here the first day of simulcast three years ago.
First day of the Toucher and Rich show.
Okay.
It was Toucher and Rich, but it was Rich Keefe.
Yes,
who was filling in
that's right.
at the time. And yeah. I'm like, you better be good.
Yeah. We all know who the real star of the midday simulcast is going to be.
The Shades?
Yeah. It's Bertrand.
Not if Sarge can help it.
No.
He's going to
honest to God, if Sarge is in, this is much watch television.
Yeah, that should be, I don't know. Who knows what's going to happen? It's going to be much watch television because Zoe's going to get pissed off at Sarge trying to be the star.
It is a television veteran in for me today by the name of Tim McCone.
Oh, all right.
Okay.
All right.
There you go.
Okay. He won't be thrown off by the big spot.
No.
He'll be fine.
No. He probably will not, but that's going to be interesting seeing how Zoe reacts. And another reason why today is interesting, and I'm kind of disappointed so far, is that this is our first day in this studio in which a certain member of another morning show is indeed here. Last week he was on vacation.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Yeah.
And so there was no interaction with this gentleman, someone who has been filming videos here in the studio
while
it was being constructed.
Studio.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He called it a studio, of course. And we have not yet seen him this morning.
Interesting.
And this is that's the disappointment so far of the day, is that I was thinking maybe by the second break, he will have at least wandered by.
Yeah.
But just in case, we do have the Wiggy alarm ready to go once he walks by.
They hate us because they jell of us.
Chicken parm sandwich. Manja. That means eat. Manja. That means eat. Manja. That means eat. Manja. That means eat.
Okay, so that is indeed
all right.
Well,
it's good to know we're prepared
for that.
If Andrew Wiggins
comes walking by the studio and peeks his head in, or hey, you guys want to invite me in? I used to play football. You might not know it by everything I wear has a Patriots logo on it.
And let me tell you something. That sound that you just played, Rich, that is going to cause the same primal fear that the tornado siren causes. Like if you grew up in an area where you had, that air raid siren, when you hear that, it's like, it's probably going to be okay, but you're going to get under the desk just in case.
Sure. And it's going to be one of those things, like when you had that intern who, during our show, during the final
your
hour.
Your own personal intern, not an intern for the program.
Well, that was Hardy's
intern. Your own
intern.
Personal intern.
Oh, yeah, that was weird. How did you get your own personal intern?
Well, first of all, I knew him from before, and his name was Will, but T-Bone ended up calling him Darren. Because Kramer had his own intern for Kramerica.
Right. Yep.
So he ended up calling Darren. But Will was one of these kids. And Rich, I don't know if you ever got a chance to talk to him. He goes to Berkeley. He's probably a junior or a senior now. He is one of these kids who is like, I never really played bass, but we had to do this project in our freshman year, so I learned how to play the bass, and we ended up doing a Radiohead set for 40 minutes and covered all these songs, and he's like, phenomenal. His one project, he built from scratch with his dad this marimba made out of PVC pipe and learned how to play, a song on it. He could do anything, and I would give him projects that's like, look, I need you to come up with 20 new music beds and blah, 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 and he'd come back 10 minutes later and say, okay, that's done. What next? He could just do anything.
Whatever,
and he
asked.
Was great. He did so much for me that summer, but I know he was a fan of looking in on the morning show.
Yeah, so he used to have this real thing that would creep out Fred, and me too, actually. I would kind of just be weirded out by it, is that he would walk into the production studio where Dan O'Brien was, our producer, and every once in a while you just see him peek his head through, and whenever he did that, we had a sounder that would play.
Hello.
And we would play. It's me. Never explained what it was.
That's great.
But it was just for all of us in the studio to just go, oh, there he is.
No one understood. It was fantastic.
And if he would go away for a minute and came back, it would be, hello. He would just speak.
I love you, won't you tell me your name?
And he would keep doing it over and over again. It was...
Hello. Is it me you're looking for?
And that's kind of the way I have a feeling it's going to be with Wiggy. At any point while we're talking, I don't care if we're mid-conversation and, you know, we're in the middle of it. We have even a guest in studio. If I see him, it's...
I had an over-under of 622, so I'm kind of disappointed that he has not been here yet. What could possibly be keeping him? We know he's not working.
Okay, we have to understand, too, where we are, it's easily avoidable. Like, I mean, he's on the other side, like the other half of the building, okay?
Sure.
So there's no reason he should be walking in front of our window. None.
Yeah, right.
I've seen their producer, who we all know he was.
Yes, he used to be a producer here. Yes.
Right, straight out of Newton, Mark Feldman.
That's right. That's right.
And I talked to him last week, and I saw him wander down toward the kitchen this morning, but no Jermaine Wiggins, not yet.
By the way, I did call him Andrew Wiggins. I did call him that. Not Jermaine Wiggins.
Oh, is that right?
I did call him Andrew Wiggins.
Okay.
All right. Yes, I did. I'm thinking 740.
I said 622. I'm already out.
Well, I did too, but now I have to adjust things.
Yeah.
I wonder
got
if, like,
guess there, Hardy?
I wonder if they actually sat him down and said, "You can't go over there."
There's no other explanation. Now, wait one second. Wasn't he here a week ago today? Wasn't he here during the first?
No.
Well, if he was, none of us were here because
I see.
There was a golf tournament.
Monday.
Here on Monday.
My first day, he was
not
here. Yeah, so Tuesday he was not here. He was gone. No. He was out of town.
Okay. So there's a chance that he was here and did wander over on the first day. The one day he was in last week, none of us were here. But the talking to seems like a real possibility.
Oh, I wouldn't doubt it. Hmm.